Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. If this were any other year, the convention that the Democrats are holding this week in Milwaukee would sound something like this.
I hereby call the Quadrennial Democratic National Convention to order.
North Carolina is proud to cast 95 votes for the next president of the United States.
I accept your nomination.
But 2020 being what it is, it will sound more like this.
You're on mute.
I believe you're on mute.
Is this thing working now?
Is my audio okay?
Can you hear me?
Like the office meetings you've been in for the past 5 months, the Democratic and Republican conventions are going to be remote affairs. Democratic delegates are staying home. So is Joe Biden. The acceptance speech he's been waiting 33 years to give will be delivered from Delaware, where running mate Kamala Harris will also claim her spot in history. The road to the convention started way back with the first candidate announcement in July of 2017. It turned into one of the largest and most diverse fields of candidates in generations, and this morning we will hear from them all. That'll be later in the program. Before they go live with this brave new world of remote conventions, party brass worked to make sure they project an image of unity behind the Biden-Harris ticket. They hammered out a platform that bridges some of the policy gaps between Biden and one-time rival Bernie Sanders. So on this Politics Monday, we get a preview of the week ahead and how it sets up the party for the final stretch of the campaign. Jane Whitley is chair of the Mecklenburg County Democratic Party and a Biden delegate to the convention. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Ray McKinnon has been active in local Democratic politics for years. He's a member of the Democratic National Committee. He's also a Sanders delegate to the convention. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Gilda Cobb Hunter is a member of the South Carolina House of Representatives representing Orangeburg County. During the South Carolina primary, which feels like a lifetime ago, she was an advisor to the Tom Steyer campaign. She's also a member of the DNC and is president of the National Black Caucus of State Legislators. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And we welcome back Antoine Seawright. He is a Democratic strategist based in Columbia and a CBS News political contributor. He worked on the 2008 and 2016 Hillary Clinton campaigns. And thank you for joining us again as well. Morning.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Let me begin with you, Ray. Like the Republicans, the Democrats have been forced to hold their convention essentially virtually. We're told that the Republicans are bringing about 350 people to Charlotte to do the business part of their convention for about one day. How much of the convention the Democrats will be holding will be held in Milwaukee?
We're pretty much 100% virtual, Mike. Most of our business has been taken care of. For instance, I've already cast my ballot for president. I've already voted on all of the two other issues that we had to vote on. And all of the credentials committees, all of those groups have already met, and they met virtually. So we are doing ours pretty much 100% virtually.
So in recent years, Gilda, at least for the general public, conventions have become kind of a TV commercial for the political party holding them. There's no longer very much drama involved in the conventions as we've come to know it. There's no mystery involved. But at least there were party stars making speeches and ratcheting up the crowd, climaxing in the big acceptance speech by the candidate and the greeting of the candidate with the vice presidential candidate and the big balloon drop. None of that theatricality can happen in a virtual convention. So will this convention or the Republican convention be worth watching?
Well, let me say I would disagree with your premise that none of the fanfare can happen. It most certainly can happen. And I think over the next few days, you will see it happen at the Democratic National Convention. You know, technology is an amazing thing. And video production means that there are opportunities to have all kinds of fanfare. And certainly, when you talk about stars and the important people as far as most Democrats are concerned, a lot of those people will be heard, will be seen in messages to convention delegates over the next 4 days. So I think there will be opportunities for some of the fanfare that is common in conventions to be held. Of course, we all acknowledge that this is different, but I, for one, am proud to be a Democrat within a party that took its membership, our candidates, and all of the working people associated with putting a convention on, took their safety and made it a priority and made the decision early on to do a virtual convention. So, so Antoine, I think it's worth watching. And quite frankly, I've kind of enjoyed not hearing all of the noise in the background. When the vice president and Senator Harris, that rollout to me was interesting because for the first time, I could actually hear what the candidates were saying without all of the noise in the background.
So, Antoine, you've been nodding as Gilda Cobb Hunter's been talking here, but let me turn it around because you're a political analyst. Both parties are under extreme stress because of this lack of ability to meet in a convention hall and trying to figure out a way to do this in a way that's never been done. I just asked her if the convention will be worth watching. Let me ask you, will anybody watch? Because it's going to be on television, but will they watch?
Absolutely. In fact, I think more people will watch this time around than they perhaps have ever watched before. The good news about virtual conventions is the fact that the DNC will be able to meet voters where they are, in their living rooms, on their devices, and so forth. And I'm excited about that. Not to mention, you have people who are now paying attention to how we do this business called politics that have never paid attention before, because we are living in times that we've never lived in before. So I'm happy about that. The most important thing I think you'll hear and see over the next 4 days is a party and a group and messaging that looks like America and that speaks to the hearts and needs of America. I don't think you'll see that next week. I think the diversity of our party will be on full display, and you will get a glimpse of not just who we are, but what we hope to be in the future, especially on Tuesday night, when you see some of our rising stars who will take the stage, 17 of them to be exact.
So CNN and MSNBC will be carrying this convention, I think, beginning at 7 o'clock tonight, and then Fox News will join at 10 for the traditional hour that the ABC, NBC, and CBS broadcast networks generally have been taking in the last several convention cycles. They, too, will do that. But there's a way to see, you mentioned devices, there's a way to see this convention more completely by logging in. Is that correct, Antoine?
That is correct. And you know, where I'm from down in Swansea, South Carolina, we call that high tech. Today, for these purposes, I'll call it high touch because everything you need will be given to you on your device. And the good news about logging in, Democrats are able to capture data, because we know when we leave this convention, the real work will start. And we have to meet people where they are again. And traditionally, it would mean knocking on doors at synagogues, at churches, at family reunions, at fish fries, and so forth. But in 2020, that is going to mean meeting people on their devices, meeting people on their TV screens, on their radio, in their emails, by way of text message, by way of social media. And I think by way of people logging in, we will be able to capture the data we need to reach people. It's a real high-touch environment.
In the last several cycles, actually, ever since television got involved in broadcasting these conventions, they have become more show busy over time. If you look back on previous conventions from the 50s and 60s, even the 70s, they're kind of dull and drab in comparison to what the last several conventions have looked like in terms of the whiz-bang technical stuff on the big stage, etc. And Jane, I'm wondering, given that, you can't do all of that kind of stuff to the degree that you could. You can't make it an entertainment. You can't make it a TV show as well as you could before. Can you capture the interest and excitement of voters? Or is this an opportunity to eschew all of that whiz-bangery and concentrate on the things that are important to voters?
Great question. And I do think that it's an opportunity for us to capture voters, as Antoine said, capture voters where they are. Mecklenburg County, by the way, had our county convention virtually already. We were the first one at 9 o'clock on that Saturday morning to do a virtual convention. And the reviews were actually great. It was a way to engage people. It was a way to get feedback, immediate feedback through chat, which a lot of people had discovered. With the few glitches, and I had to laugh when you played that clip before. I think you captured our parts of our county convention there. But starting in January, I had never heard of Zoom. Now, this is my fourth virtual convention in about as many months, and people are excited, they're engaged. We are texting voters, we are reaching out by social media. So yes, I think maybe necessity is the mother of invention in this yeah. case, because we're learning that people will communicate, even if we're not on a crowded convention floor, we will find ways to get our message across.
So Ray, if this works well for the Democrats and for the Republicans next week, have we seen the last of those old conventions? Is this the wave of the future?
I do not think so. Maybe there will be some element of a virtual option, but you really can't replace the magic that is a convention. I was telling a friend last night, I remember Philadelphia in 16. There is something that you cannot reproduce virtually. So we certainly will do that. And you know, our convention this year might not be as raucous as it was in 16 or before. But I do believe this is going to give access where maybe there wasn't access. And so we're making the best out of something that is not good. But I do wish that, you know, the convention goers could have that experience, because there really is something about experiencing a convention in person that you cannot reproduce virtually. Although a lot of folks are working hard at the state party and the national party to try to at least give some of that excitement back.
Now, you're a member of the Democratic National Committee, but you are also going to this convention, if going is the right word. You're participating in this convention as a Bernie Sanders delegate. Does that mean that you are pledged to vote for Bernie on the first ballot, or will you be released to vote for Joe Biden?
Well, I'm a DNC member, so we're automatic delegates, or formerly known as superdelegates, so we aren't bound to any candidate. But they did ask us to kind of say who we're supporting, and I did support Sanders in 16 as well as 20. Although 20, I started off with somebody else, and my pick dropped out, so I kind of fell back on Sanders.
So let me ask both Jane and you, Ray, about this, because Jane, you're a Biden delegate. Ray, you are a Sanders supporter. What does Joe Biden need to say on Thursday night, as he lays out his vision for the Democratic Party and his vision for his presidency, that can capture various factions of the Democratic Party and make them into one big block of voters who will go out and campaign for him? I'll start with you, Jay. What does he have to say?
I think that he needs to lay out his vision that better days lie ahead, that our best days lie ahead.
They better.
That the next convention, we may be in a hall again, all together. And as Ray said, you do miss some of that excitement from being in the big hall. But I think that with the Democratic Party, we have the opportunity to bring America back to being America again, and to rebuild our institutions, to build these back better. And I think that what he needs...
Let me stop you there. We have to stop, and I'll get Ray's answer to that question in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Fifth Third Bank, dedicated to the financial empowerment of the community by investing time, resources, and people in the Charlotte area and throughout the state. More at 53.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. On this Politics Monday, we're talking about political conventions, specifically the Democratic National Convention, which begins today. Jane Whitley is the chair of the Mecklenburg County Democratic Party and a Biden delegate. Gilda Cobb-Hunter is a former member, or a member until, Friday, of the Democratic National Committee and president of the National Black Caucus of State Legislators. She represents South Carolina District 66 in the House down there. Antoine Seawright, a Democratic strategist and a political analyst for CBS News. And Ray McKinnon is a member of the Democratic National Committee and a Sanders delegate. So what does Biden, Ray, have to say to you and your fellow Sanders supporters and to other candidates who have supporters who really wanted their candidate to win? What does he have to say to them to bring them into the fold and unify the party?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know that there's one thing that Sanders must say, but I know I would agree with Biden must say. I know I would agree with Senator Sanders that I think the overwhelming majority of progressives and other folks understand the fact that we need to get rid of Donald Trump. So that's one. I do think the vice president needs to make it clear who he is, to the chairwoman's point, but not just the policies he'll enact, but what are going to be his values. There is some trepidation on some things, but the biggest thing that we all understand is that our number one goal, our number one priority above everything, is to ensure that Donald Trump is not reelected. And that is not a foregone conclusion, no matter how many times we want to think. And so I think the vice president, what he will do is he will remind us of that truth, and then he will make it clear about what his vision is for our nation. And so I think that is important to get through, because there, where we are different isn't as big as some folks want to make it seem. And that's what we've got to keep pushing at.
I don't want to spend a lot of time on the answer to this question, but I think it's an important question to ask. Are there still Bernie or bust folks out there, and are they a sizable enough block to make a difference in the election if they decide not to throw their support to Joe Biden?
Well, I think the election is going to be close no matter what. So I think anything like that could be a deciding point. I think there probably are. I don't think that there is a large number of them. I agree with Senator Sanders that he said last night that the overwhelming majority of progressives, I think, understand where we need to go. I don't believe the numbers are that high. And they weren't that great in 2016, I keep telling folks. They weren't as great as people make it out to be. I believe folks automatically will vote for the vice president, even if he wasn't our first or second choice, because the other option is Donald Trump, and he is an existential threat to us as black and brown folks, to us as Americans, and we've got to get this man out of office.
So, Gilda, the president and the Republican Party are casting your ticket, the Democratic ticket, as, quote, the most ideologically extreme in American history. There are a lot of low-information voters out there, a lot of Fox News watchers out there who might just go, yeah, I believe that, too. And they are frightened by words like radical and leftist and Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez. She frightens them. And they might believe the president's claims that a President Biden will, quote, take away your guns, take away your Second Amendment, no religion, no anything, hurt the Bible, hurt God. He's against God. That's a quote. First, two-part question, Gilda. First, is any of that true?
No.
Okay. Second question, how do you fight that? What does Joe Biden have to say, and how does he have to say it to neutralize those mischaracterizations?
What I want Joe Biden to do is focus on voters who can be persuaded at this late date. We're 80 days, give or take, from the election. And quite frankly, I think Democrats make a mistake when they focus energy on trying to convince Trump voters to vote for Democrats. That ship sailed a long, long time ago. What I want the vice president to spend his time on Thursday night is not Donald Trump. All of us know Donald Trump. Donald Trump is Donald Trump. He has lied every day he's been in office. So why are we expecting that to change now? What the vice president needs to do is come across with a clear message that will resonate with the base of the Democratic Party to drive turnout so that he and Senator Harris can have coattails. We've got a Senate race in North Carolina, Georgia, South Carolina, Mississippi, and we need to hold on to Doug Jones in Alabama. So the time should be spent motivating your base voters, because I don't think the election will be close if we do our work as Democrats. What we've got to do is stop agonizing and start organizing. Donald Trump has done nothing that is surprising. Joe Biden needs to spend this airtime and this national stage he will have on Thursday night telling us why he should get our vote, why he should be president, and what he will do to clean up this mess that Donald Trump and his administration has left. People aren't interested in, I don't think, in hearing a bunch of Trump bashing. We've been hearing that for a very long time. What we need to hear is what Democrats are going to do.
And they might hear a little bit of Trump bashing beginning tonight. And I think that was intentional, because Antoine, Democrats have asked former Ohio Republican governor and former Republican presidential candidate John Kasich to speak. And I think he speaks tonight. I don't know what time he speaks, but he opposed abortion rights and he fought labor unions when he was the governor of Ohio. He also opposes the reelection of Donald Trump. So is it a good move for Democrats to include just a little bit of Lincoln Project Republicanism into their convention, Antoine?
Well, we're a big tent party, and so we embrace anyone who believes in what our values are and what's important to making this little idea called America work. There are Democrats, Republicans, independents, and independent thinkers who will vote Democratic, not necessarily because they love Democrats so much. They understand how important the future of this country is. And I think John Kasich is one example. We do not win elections when we do not include everyone. Elections are about coalitions. They're about constituencies. And in this election, because Donald Trump has been such a disaster from a policy standpoint and from a personality standpoint, you're going to see non-traditional Democratic voters show up to vote for Democrats up and down the ballot. So I think what Joe Biden has to do is remind people about the urgency of this election. Karen Bass said it best, for Black people, we are casting a survival vote. I think he has to remind people that this will be a generational election. The next 10 years or 30 or 40 years will be on the ballot, considering the judiciary. I also think he has to remind people the failures of Donald Trump. And we do not have to get into Trump bashing in order to remind people of the failures of Donald Trump, particularly since we're living through the worst pandemic since 1918. We're living through some of the worst economic times since 1932. I think people need to be reminded, but also he has to pivot to what he and his administration would do differently. And then lastly, I think he has to remind people of what a Biden-Harris ticket looks like. It looks like a historical ticket that he was a part of in 2008, and it looks like we can make history again if we do some of the same very things we did in 2008, and that's turnout in numbers like we've never turned out in before.
So John Kasich did not support Hillary Clinton when he lost his nomination or his bid for the presidency on the Republican side 4 years ago, but he also didn't support Donald Trump. He says that he has searched his conscience when the Democrats asked him to speak and decided that we, quote, need a new direction. We just can't keep going the way we're going. And he says he's speaking to bring about a healing in America and to bring unity where there has been division. Those are his words. But the Democratic Party has always had a problem with unity, Ray. And will his speaking for Biden against Trump do something to galvanize and unify Democrats?
I don't think so. I think, again, this isn't, elections are about coalitions, but this is a base election. We know that. And I don't think Kasich is going to do anything to turn out our base. And that's, I think, where we have to focus. It's where we didn't focus in 16. I think we are making some of the same mistakes when we're giving Kasich primetime billing and we're giving 1 minute to one of our rising stars on the left. I mean, this is an opportunity, and I'm talking about AOC. Mm-hmm. This is, in Kasich, I mean, we can't just mull over his anti-choice stances, his anti-union stances. I had so many of my friends in the union movement, a labor movement, which I'm a big supporter of, who are just scratching their heads about this, and I am too. I don't believe this is going to unify Democrats and turn out our base.
Right.
And this is a base vote I mean, this is a base election, and we know that.
Antoine.
But Mike, respectfully, while I agree with you, it may not motivate Democrats, but I think it will give people who support think like John Kasich, it will give them some validation and even more energy to show up, because there are a lot of people who think like John Kasich who may not be traditional Democrats. And if we're really going to brand ourselves as the big tent party, then we have to be embracing when people want to come under our tent. And while he may not be a driving force at the top of the ticket, there's some down ballot races, there's some swing states, swing elections, Ms. Gilda just named a few of them, where we're going to have to bring along some Republicans and independents if we want to win in those places. I think
we can use Kasich to do that, but not giving him primetime billing is all I'm saying. He should do those things on the ground. He really should, but that doesn't equal bringing them to the convention and giving him this platform. It just is. I mean, you know, the convention speech is what launched President Obama on national stage. This is big billing, and we're giving it to a person who's anti-choice and anti-labor. And I'll say
one last thing. Keep in mind that we all do not 100% agree with everyone who may be on our side this time around. That does not mean that we cannot, that they do not bring something to the table that would be beneficial long term.
So we have just witnessed an example of Democratic disunity right here.
No, that's called a little heated fellowship, but it's okay.
Gilda, the Democrats made their decision to hold their convention virtually before the Republicans ultimately reached that same conclusion, because the Republicans yanked their convention out of Charlotte and put it in Jacksonville for 20 minutes and then decided they couldn't do it there either. So given the fact that you didn't know what the Republicans would ultimately decide to do, how do you explain what could be viewed as a pretty bold move for the party out of power?
I think it's a bold move. I think it's a sign, a signal that Democrats have learned the lessons from 2016 almost, because I agree with Ray, while it's great for Kasich to do all that Antoine said he could do, you don't give that kind of primetime real estate to somebody who has a history on of voting against some of the issues that are core value issues for Democrats. But quite frankly, as I started out my comments, I think all Democrats and leaning Democrats ought to be proud of the fact that the decision was made that the vice president, even before he has assumed the bully pulpit of the White House, has led by example. It was clear to him, to his team, to the DNC, and all of the decision makers involved in this convention, that it did not make sense for us to come together in the traditional kind of way and expose people to this pandemic in the way that a live in-person visit in Milwaukee would do. And my heart bleeds for Milwaukee and the economic impact, but I think we've seen a great example of taking a lemon and making lemonade with this virtual conference that has been planned for this week.
So Jane, one of the things that political conventions always do through the media is focus sometimes, at least at portions of it, on state delegations. I covered the Democratic Convention in San Francisco 150 years ago, and my job was to cover the South Carolina delegation to that and see what get reaction, et cetera, and go to the caucus meetings and talk to luminaries in the state party and put them on television. Have you or anybody in your delegation or the North Carolina delegation been contacted by these networks to cover you? Because this is a different kind of convention. You will not be caucusing at 9 or 10:30 in the morning every morning in a ballroom someplace.
That is true. And we do miss that part of networking and connecting with the members of the media as well as other state delegations and each other. We have been contacted by an NPR reporter who is going to be interviewing us tonight, or interviewing me. But no, we've missed some of the media coverage. I will give you an example. Our primary was on March 3rd. We had 4 international media outlets in our headquarters, where I am today. We had BBC, CNN, Espanol, Al Jazeera, and NPR. We're not going to see that during this convention. We realize that. And yes, it is missed. And, you know, hopefully we will be able to be in a place 4 years from now when we can bring that back.
I understand that the delegates to the Democratic Convention will be casting their votes remotely, even for the presidential nominee. We've all heard about ongoing attempts by the Russians to interfere in the last election and in this election right now. And we have all been told that voting online in a general election is not wise because that opens the whole thing up to computer hacking. Has anyone considered what might happen if Russia hacks you as you try to cast your votes? As the, you're laughing, Gilda, but I'm not sure that you should be laughing. I'm just wondering if anybody's considered the idea that your vote online as a delegate is not going to be totally secure, Ray.
Well, Mike, it's not necessarily what you think. It's a paper ballot that we fill out, that we fill in, and then we email it back securely to a secure state-specific email address.
And is there any such thing as a secure email?
Well, I think I guess it could be intercepted, but there's a paper ballot that I still have that I can show that they check. Actually, for me, the state party called and took mine over the phone, and they had verifying information so that we are taking all of the precautions that we can to do this.
And Mike, I laughed, not necessarily because it was funny, but the notion of Russians and tampering with ballots, my mind went back to 2016 and their activities there. But as has been pointed out, we have accountability that is a part of the balloting this time around. There's a verifiable paper trail, which is what most of us across the country have been asking of election commissions that don't have it. And so there is a system of accountability that is built into this balloting that I think even if they try to hack it, there is documentation of what each delegate did. So I'm comfortable that while they probably would have tried, I just don't think that that's something they'll be successful in the event they've made that effort.
We have to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about how Joe Biden became the nominee. We'll talk about Kamala Harris and what she brings to the ticket. Talk a little bit more about party unity and more. Is Trump lurking? Because this morning, a lot of people in North Carolina got ballots, mail-in ballots with the president's picture on them. We'll talk about that when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. As voters start having their say on the 2020 election, Charlotte Talks wants to hear just what it is they're saying. If you're a voter and would like to be included in upcoming shows about the election, email charlottetalks@wfae.org. Again, that's charlottetalks@wfae.org. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the Democratic National Convention, which begins today. I was going to say in Milwaukee, but it's everywhere. It's everywhere and nowhere at the same time. Jane Whitley is the chair of the Mecklenburg County Democratic Party and a Biden delegate. Gilda Cobb Hunter is a member of the DNC and president of the National Black Caucus of State Legislators from South Carolina. Antoine Seawright, a Democratic strategist, and Ray McKinnon, member of the Democratic National Committee and a Sanders delegate. Gilda, prior to the South Carolina Democratic primary, Joe Biden was looking like and also ran. South Carolina, particularly African-American voters in South Carolina, led by Representative Jim Clyburn, put him over the top. He helped Biden eliminate all of the other rivals as a result of that primary. What does Joe Biden owe South Carolina Democratic voters, and can he appeal to independents and disaffected Republicans in the Palmetto State? Is there any way to do that in a very red state?
Of course there is, and I would suggest to you that while the national premise was that Joe Biden was kind of on life support, the reality for those of us on the ground in South Carolina was never whether or not Joe Biden would win. The question was always the margin of victory. Without question, Congressman Clyburn's endorsement of Joe Biden sealed the question about a large margin of victory. And so there is always, when you do that kind of thing, there is always something that people have in that people expect. Here's what I'm trying to say. What Joe Biden owes South Carolina, it's what he owes the country. That is, first and foremost, stay focused on this election. It is not over. Don't start counting your chickens before they hatch. Do everything you can to excite your base of support. Don't get it twisted and don't get confused looking at trying to sway people and persuade people who are not persuadable. And then when you win, get in there and surround yourself with people, men and women of quality, of competence, of integrity, who know what needs to happen and get it done. Now, it would be nice for him to look at South Carolina and say, well, I'm going to do all that, but I'll give y'all a little something extra since you increased my margin and scared all the rest of the folk out of the race. So there are fruits of our labor that South Carolinians will be looking towards.
So, Antoine, Joe Biden,
particularly Black women.
Thank you. Antoine, Joe Biden has been running for president for more than 30 years. He first ran in the last century. Would it be accurate to say that aside from Harold Stassen, who ran for the Democratic nomination for 20 years, that no other candidate has run so long who eventually made it to the top of the ticket? Would that be accurate?
Well, depending on how you look at it, I think that's subjective versus objective, but I'm fifth generation AME, and we learned very early on that what's delayed perhaps will never be denied. And so his delay to being the nomination and perhaps the president just has not been denied, and timing is everything. I think that he was preserved to be our nominee and perhaps to be the next president for such a time as this, and I appreciate that. It also means that Joe Biden, all over that time period, has been laboring and has been doing everything he can to bring this party together so we can be positioned in a moment like this to get across the finish line first. That's why he was the most requested surrogate in the 2018 midterms, those consequential midterms in which Democrats made history. And that's why you saw the political concrete of this Democratic Party, African-American voters, show up the way we did to vote for Joe Biden, starting in South Carolina. And as I reminded you the last time I was on your show, the road to heaven and the White House runs through South Carolina, and Black people were going to decide not only who our nominee was going to be, was going to have big influence in who occupies that temporary public housing unit at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue called the White House.
Yep. I like the way you described 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Biden was the front runner, Jane, at the beginning of the primary season. He stumbled along the way only to be lifted out of obscurity by South Carolina voters. He is prone to gaffes. He's often halting in his speech. He often confuses words, which makes him look befuddled. And the president makes fun of that. He capitalizes on that. How does he go through a race with a president not afraid to throw serious and some would describe as unpresidential barbs without stumbling and without losing to Donald Trump? How does he do that, Jane?
You know, Donald Trump doesn't have a lot of room to talk about somebody putting their foot in their mouth all the time. Joe Biden is a decent man who has a lot of experience in government, who has the gravitas, he has the experience to be the next great president of the United States. The Democratic Party is solidly behind him, and thank you to South Carolina.
Welcome.
For leading the way on that. Joe Biden has the opportunity to bring this country together. I will tell you, as chair of the Democratic Party, I am getting calls from Republicans in our headquarters who want to do whatever they can to help elect Joe Biden. I think that he is pulling people in from the Republican Party, from our unaffiliated voters. I totally agree with Representative Cobb Hunter that we do need to get our base voters out to make Joe Biden the next president of the United States. But I will also tell you that there are a lot of swing voters that are coming over and that Joe Biden is pulling everybody together to bring this country together again.
Antoine, when Mitt Romney ran against Obama in his reelection effort, Obama's reelection effort, he played it fairly safe because I think he and other Republicans thought that voters were tired of Obama and were going to show him the exit door. to that public housing project called 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, as you so aptly put it. This time, given the collapse of the economy, given the COVID pandemic, is Joe Biden, are Democrats playing it too safe? Because Biden's pretty much stayed in the basement in Delaware and made an occasional appearance. He's not campaigning because he can't campaign, really, at the moment. And we have, I think, the Trump campaign out banging on, they say, a million doors a day while Obama is not doing any retail door knocking at all. Are they playing it too safe?
Mike, you sound like those people in the bubble and on Twitter. I don't believe Democrats are playing it safe. In fact, I think there's an elevated urgency within this party to reach every single voter we can, including those who did not vote for us in 2016 and those who did not vote at all. Because we understand when you leave food on the table, that means the country will go hungry. This election perhaps was more important than any other election in my political lifetime. And I say that with all due respect to 2008 historic and 2012 election of Barack Obama. We did not have a Donald Trump on the other side that we had to face or that would govern this country. We've seen what Donald Trump will do, and Lord knows we see a preview of what he will do if he's elected again. And so I don't think Democrats are taking for granted. I look at the money we're raising up and down the ballot for our candidates. I look at how much we're contacting voters. I look at how we're recalibrating in terms of our outreach and our strategy and the way we're connecting with voters. And so I don't think this is a run-the-clock-out strategy. I don't think it's conservative. I do think it's the right thing for Joe Biden to do, to lead by example by being in Delaware and speaking to voters. I think that we just have to pump the volume up of how we do it and where we do it and who we do it to once we get out of this convention this week.
So, Gilda, a lot has been made about Joe Biden choosing Kamala Harris as his running mate, particularly because she gave him such a tough time in at least one, maybe possibly two, of those debates during the primaries. Democrats see this as a positive. This they see this as Joe Biden exhibiting strength in his ability to forgive and forget and move on and use her positives. But President Trump sees this as a weakness, and he's calling her names now and bemoaning poor Joe, who had to deal with this nasty woman. So how do you see it? How will voters see it?
I think voters understand Donald Trump is scared to death about this Biden-Harris ticket, first and foremost. And quite frankly, what we as Democrats have to continue to do is ignore Donald Trump. Let Trump be Trump and focus on what we need to do to have a mandate come November 3rd. We don't need to worry about what Trump is doing. We need to stay focused on what we as Democrats need to do to make sure it's not just about voter registration, it's voter education. And we're in the voter education phase, or should be, of this campaign now, and that is taking the message to voters about why the Biden-Harris team is the team to lead this country. And quite frankly, Mike, when you look at the Biden-Harris team, you're looking at America. Kamala Harris represents the diversity that is in this country, not just gender, but ethnicity, being from Jamaican and Indian parentage. That is something that is more relevant for today and the rest of this century than just somebody who is two white men on a ticket. So I think what you're going to see is a continuation of the sound judgment that Joe Biden exercised when he selected Senator Harris. You're going to see that throughout the campaign. And this business about Biden in the basement, please, come on, man, as Biden would say, with technology the way it is nowadays, Joe Biden can be anywhere, everywhere he wants to be. And we've seen that. This notion, this is a whole new normal. And we've got some campaign tactics that I hope will last beyond the pandemic, because it allows us to focus on substance and not so much style.
So Joe Biden, Ray, at one point promised to choose a woman, given his support by black people this time around and the advancement of the Black Lives Matter movement. It made real choice sense to choose a black woman. He had several black women to choose from. Did he choose the right one?
I think he did. I said earlier about my first choice pulling out, and Kamala was my first choice in this primary, but she pulled out before I decided to go public. in support of a person. I think he chose the right person. I think people who point out her flaws, sure, she has flaws, but I think she is the most progressive vice presidential candidate we have ever had. By the numbers, anybody who thinks otherwise are crazy. But no matter who the vice president chose, as the representative said, Donald Trump and his team are going to say they were the most, they were these radical folks. So I'm glad he pushed beyond that and chose a person who isn't perfect, but who I think can be molded, as Angela Davis said. Biden and Harris can be molded and pushed farther along than any of these other folks would have been.
Ray McKinnon is a member of the Democratic National Committee, a Sanders delegate to the convention, the Democratic Convention, which begins tonight. Today, Jane Whitley is the chair of the Mecklenburg County Democratic Party and a Biden delegate. Gilda Cobb Hunter, the National Black Caucus of State Legislators president, and Antoine Seawright, a CBS News political strategist. Thank you all for the hour. It's been a really long political season. It started, as we said, in July of 2017 when the first Democrat announced they were running for president. So we're going to spend a few minutes at the end of the program here looking back at the candidates who came and went in the run-up to this convention, which begins today. Some memory lane moments.
This is Congressman John Delaney, and you've probably heard the big news, which is that I'm running for president.
Well, I'm announcing this morning that I am withdrawing from the 2020 race.
I'm Richard Ojeda, and I'm running for the president.
Ojeda is suspending his long-shot presidential bid.
Julian Castro.
I am a candidate for president of the United States of America.
I've determined that it simply isn't our time.
We're here now with Senator Kamala Harris.
I am running for president of the United States.
I'm suspending our campaign today.
Hi, I'm Marianne Williamson. I'm considering running as a candidate for the Democratic nomination.
Marianne Williamson has dropped out of the race.
I'm Cory Booker, and I'm running for president.
Today, I'm suspending my campaign for president.
Governor Jay Inslee!
I'm a candidate to become the next president of the United States.
It's become clear that I'm not going to be carrying the ball. I'm not going to be the president.
I'm John Hickenlooper. I'm running for president.
I'm ending my campaign for president.
Beto O'Rourke is in.
But I'm running to serve you as the next president.
We do not have the means to pursue this campaign.
Senator Kirsten Gillibrand.
I'm filing an exploratory committee for president of the United States.
I'm ending my presidential campaign.
Mayor Wayne Messam of Miramar, Florida announced his bid for president.
I'm Mike Gravel. And I'm running for president.
Former Alaska Senator Mike Gravel officially announcing the end of his 2020 presidential campaign.
I'm Tim Ryan, and I'm running for president.
I'm announcing today that I'm withdrawing from the presidential campaign.
Congressman Eric Swalwell.
I'm running for president of the United States.
Today ends our presidential campaign.
Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton announced on his website this morning he is going to run for president.
I'm ending my campaign for president.
I'm Steve Bullock, and I'm running for president.
Bullock announced that he is suspending his campaign.
I'm Bill de Blasio, and I'm running for president.
It's clearly not my time.
Former Pennsylvania Congressman Joe Sestak is candidate number 25.
Joe Sestak dropped out of the race Sunday.
Then there's Andrew Yang, the first Asian American Democrat ever to run for the Oval Office.
It is clear tonight from the numbers that we are not going to win this race.
Senator Michael Bennett of Colorado.
So what are your plans for the future?
My plan is to run for president.
I think it's fitting for us to end the campaign.
Hi, everyone. I'm Deval Patrick.
Former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick is suspending his bid.
My name's Tom Steyer. I'm running for president.
I can't see a path where I can win the presidency.
Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
I am running for president of the United States.
The truth is that the path has narrowed to a close.
Amy Klobuchar.
To announce my candidacy for president of the United States.
I am ending my campaign.
Former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg is officially a Democratic candidate.
Today, I am leaving the race.
Senator Elizabeth Warren.
I am a candidate for president of the United States of America.
I am suspending my campaign.
Tulsi Gabbard in the house.
Are you going to run for president of the United States?
I have decided to run. I'm suspending my presidential campaign.
Hi, I'm Bernie Sanders. I'm running for president.
While we are winning the ideological battle, and while we are winning the support of so many young people and working people throughout the country, I have concluded that this battle for the Democratic nomination will not be successful.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.